Saturday.
8:15, having arrived, we're going to call the Education and Finance Committee to order. And we do have a quorum here, so we have the April 4th, 2013 minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve? Representative Reinert moves the April 4th, 2013 minutes. Hearing any discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion carried. The minutes are approved. We're going to start out with Representative Morgan here. And he has House File 1003. We have, I think, seven bills on the agenda, 90 minutes to cover them, which gives us about 12.83 minutes on a bill. So, you know, we're going to have a lot more debate coming up on, you know, this is kind of the last day of the regular season, so to speak. So these bills are very, very important, but the playoffs will begin tomorrow. So just if members can kind of keep that in mind as we go through these bills. We do have, what time are the, do we have a room for later?
Yeah, 4 o'clock.
We do have a room for 4 o'clock if we don't finish, but I'm hoping we can, and if we can't, we'll come back at four, but if we can get that done, that'd be great. All right, Representative Morgan, if you could move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 1003 for possible inclusion in the K-12 Education Omnibus Bill.
Please proceed.
Thank you very much. I'll be very brief so we can all be quick. I have Sheila Pipo here to talk about the Minnesota Math Corps bill, and she'll give an introduction of the bill, and then we have someone who's actually putting this, implementing the Reading Corps and the Math Corps, and she'll talk about what they do with that. So
very good. Sheila. Welcome.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sheila Pipo. I am the executive director for the Serve Minnesota Action Network. Our organization is responsible for implementing three AmeriCorps programs. One of them is the Minnesota Reading Corps, which is now the largest AmeriCorps state program in the country. So it's something we're very proud of, along with the Minnesota Math Corps and Minnesota Opportunity Corps. And as some of you may know, AmeriCorps programs are often referred to as the Domestic Peace Corps. So we're providing tutors into schools to help students achieve proficiency in reading and math. I'm delighted to have the opportunity to provide testimony today about the Math Corps. It is a statewide initiative that is now in its fifth year. Its objective is to make sure that students are achieving proficiency in algebra by the end of eighth grade. Research shows us that algebra is a critical gateway course because it correlates to high school graduation along with entrance and completion of post-secondary education. Math Corps started in St. Cloud in 2008. The district at that time was growing concerned with its growing achievement gap. The district had strong support from the Reading Corps, and wanted to see if a similar data-driven, research-based program could be designed to help the deep needs that its students were facing in math. Following the vision of Reading Corps, Math Corps combines the people power of AmeriCorps along with the science of how students learn to do math. During our testimony, we'll be describing the model, the students we serve, and the results we've achieved. You'll also be hearing from my colleague, Melissa Sonic, who is an instructional coach from the North St. Paul Maplewood Oakdale School District. She provides internal coaching to both our Reading and our Math Corps members in her school, and she'll be highlighting the results that she's seen at Carver Elementary. So in your packets, you should have some handouts, and the first slide just shows how Math Corps really is a data-driven model. We start with the assessments, and we, in Math Corps, we have two tools that are very important to us because they help us determine the very exact needs students have. So we look at the MCA scores and their MAP scores. And what's really valuable about those two tools is it zeroes in on exactly what strands the students are struggling in, as long as the specific skills. And by knowing that information, then we can tailor a tutoring plan for each of those students and help fill in their gaps. We conduct frequent progress monitoring to ensure that the students are grasping the concepts. If they're not understanding, we go back and review the specific skills. Because we're working as pairs and we're not having to worry about a full classroom of children, we can go at the pace that they need to go at. So we don't have to move on without being assured that they've got the skills they need. And often the needs are great, especially when we're starting with fourth grade. So we are seeing that we work with students much longer than 12 to 18 weeks like we see in Reading Corps. We're seeing that we're with the students for oftentimes a full year and sometimes beyond that. So the next slide shows what the situation in Minnesota is. Right now there are over 120,000 students who were not proficient on the MCAs last year. And Math Corps works exclusively with students who are identified as lagging behind their peers, and especially those ones in the yellow zone. Those are the ones that are partially proficient. And as you well know, students that are struggle in these areas are disproportionately poor students and students of color. We are providing these students with tailored interventions that are accelerating their achievement to help close this gap. The intervention curriculum that are used by the Math Corps members is highly scripted, it's scaffolded, it uses manipulatives, so it's not just doing a lot of the same thing that's happening in the classrooms already where the students aren't grasping it. They're actually able to see the math, they're able to use the base 10 blocks, they're able to use the geometric figures, and they can see, they can understand the concepts much more clearly. And we also, as we assess students, we find out what's working with the curriculum and what's not. And this last year, we found that students were still, fact fluency was a big deal. They weren't able to give their facts automatically, so that's something that we strengthened this past year. And it's something we're always listening to what the schools are telling us and how to make improvements to the program. The results we're very proud of. The data collected on Math Corps students over the last school year shows that they are making progress. They're exceeding their growth targets. So on the slide with the blue bars, you'll see by grade level, when looking at the MAP scores, we'd expect that students would, at least 50% of the students would achieve their math rates goals. And Math Corps is exceeding that in all grade levels. And that's particularly notable in that 7th and 8th grade level, because by that time the students' needs are very deep. So that we're able to have them exceed their growth targets we're very proud of that.
Ms. Pipe, I'm going to ask you to finish up here if you could,
yep.
Please.
And then the last slide, I just wanted to show you that the demand is growing. And this last year we've received requests from 232 schools with wanting them to have 350 members. And I will turn it over to Melissa.
All right.
Very good. Ms. Sonic, please introduce yourself.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Melissa Sonic. I'm an instructional coach in Independent School District 622 at Carver Elementary School. I'm also the internal coach for both Math Corps and Reading Corps, and both programs use a data-driven approach to accelerate our students and close that achievement gap. So I'm here this morning to tell you the story of the partnership between Carver and Minnesota Math Corps. So how does Math Corps fit in at Carver? Well, it fits into a structure and system that we have in all of our schools called Response to Intervention. Response to Intervention is a three-tiered system. Tier one starts with powerful classroom instruction. It begins with a viable and guaranteed curriculum. But effective teachers also understand that teaching isn't just turning a curriculum page by page. It's differentiating to meet the needs of our students. Teaching whole group, small group, one-on-one, reteaching, pre-teaching, vocabulary, assessing. It's what I like to call teaching with your hair on fire. And that works for about 80% of our students. But children take different paths to common outcomes. And so some of our students need more. And that's where Tier 2 intervention comes in. Now, Tier 2 is different than Tier 1 with three characteristics. It's evidence-based, it's small group, it's implemented with fidelity, and it's done in addition to what's happening in Tier 1. And about 15% of our students respond to these strategies, and this is where Math Corps fits in. At Carver, we have 24 students currently being serviced in Math Corps. If you turn to your handout, there's a document that looks like this, and I'm going to talk about our data. These are our results at Carver. Last year was our first year with Math Corps, and Carver's proficiency as a site went up 4%. Our proficiency in fourth grade went up 5.3%, and our proficiency in fifth grade went up 2.2%. But I want to tell you one student story. It's a fourth grade girl, an English language learner, who qualifies for free and reduced price lunch. She scored in the spring in her MAP test a 188. Then she had Math Corps for a year and scored 219, which is a 21-point gain. But more importantly than her scores, I want to tell you her story. So forgive me as I switch into the vernacular of an 11-year-old girl. The step I did with Abdi, that was her member, made what we were doing in class easier because he showed us how to do it with like cubes and blocks and this rectangle map thing. He just made it make sense for me. And this year math is easy because I remember all the stuff he taught me last year. I like math now because I'm good at it. But what about the rest of our students, right? Because that's one of our students. Well, 50% of the students serviced in Math Corps went from partially meeting standards to meeting standards. 93% of those students were students of color. So when we're talking about closing the achievement gap, that's closing the achievement gap. Two-thirds of our students hit their growth target, as evidenced by the MAP test. 84% of those students were students of color. So this means that our hardest to teach kids, our English language learners, our students who live in poverty, are beating the odds. Moving, usually about 20% of our students can move quartiles. Math Corps moving 50% of their students is incredible. So why is this important? Well, students who do not meet state standards are more likely to live a life of poverty. Students who do meet state standards are more likely to graduate from high school and go on to post-secondary education. When we move students from that partially meets category to that meets, we are, in essence, changing their stars. We are changing the trajectory of a child's life. So as partners, Minnesota Math Corps and Independent School District 622 are working close to close that achievement gap and give our students the opportunity to really live the life they deserve. In closing, as an educator, I want to live a life that benefits others. And saying that this partnership between Math Corps and 622 is benefiting others is an understatement. We are truly changing the trajectory of a child's life, and I don't know of anything nobler than that.
Thank you very much, Representative Van Zelk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Morgan, this has a cost, $2 million over the biennium. And I have to ask you about statewide applicability and accessibility, and specifically if a seventh grade math teacher in Reamer or Grigla or Biwabik or Sleepy Eye would have any knowledge of this at all.
Representative Morgan.
Mr. Chair, Representative Enzel, that's a great question. I think perhaps Ms. Peeple could give a better answer to that question than I could.
Ms. Peeple?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because of our connection to Minnesota Reading Corps, we're able to reach a lot of different school districts across the state. So this next year, we're hoping to reach into Grand Rapids and Nashwauk-Uwatin and a lot of schools that have high need. So we are able to spread ourselves much beyond the metro.
Representative Van Zelk?
Well, frankly, that's a good thing. But you should have been there all along. And I have a growing bias about these slices of funding, very prescriptive, available only to a slice of the student population in public schools in Minnesota. Just something to think about, members, but obviously this has merit. It's just that it should be available to all kids in all districts throughout the state.
Is there anyone here who would like to testify for or against House File 1003? Representative Morgan, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, I think the guys here said it very well. We can spend some money to help close the achievement gap. Hopefully we can get those dollars all over the state and move the dial all across the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you
Chair.
Very much. Representative Morgan moves to lay over House File 1003 for possible inclusion. Thank you so much. And we will go to Representative Mullery. And Representative Dabney moves House File 1401 below
yes.
Laid over for possible inclusion. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Representative Mullery, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the first thing I'll ask in seeing I hope that the chair won't allow a certain representative at the end of the table to divert have an amendment to divert these funds to his project like he does in other committees on my bills.
Okay. Representative Mulry, would you move that mic a little closer?
Okay.
Wherever?
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Chair. Mr. Chair and members, for about 8 years I've been really working a lot with NCSL on the whole issue of youth development. And the there's such a tie between the IQ part of the brain and the executive function part of the brain, and if we don't have good executive function working and well developed, it's hard for those students to do well on the IQ part of the brain. And so this gets at that in a way that is really important. It gets at trying to work with students and young people in efforts to develop a good attitude towards school, towards each other, to work with the parents to unite and every effort. And Mr. Chairman, we're finding out over and over that if the dollars aren't put in where they're needed in the first place, we end up having to pay 10, 20 or more times that, as Art Rolnick studies and other ones nationally have shown. And with me this morning I have Todd Barnes and Al Flowers to briefly explain this program.
Very good. And Representative Mulray, I appreciate.
And Mr. Chairman, just Rebecca Gagnon from the school board in Minneapolis just got here. So,
very good. And first of all, Representative Mulray, I want to thank you for your efforts on your committee, where I know you're looking at a lot of different factors that impact youth and ultimately impact their educational achievements. So I appreciate that very much. And testifiers, if I could ask you to keep very just right to the point and very succinct, if you could, I'd appreciate that. But please introduce yourself and welcome.
Al Flowers, and Mr. Chair, and committee members, the Community Standard Initiative was thought up in August 2011, and it was about responsible communication, and it was about values. And we started it. I went to a daycare and watched kids in there cursing, saying profanity, and I said, "What are we going to do about this situation?" So our community came up with this initiative, and it's supported by the NAACP, Urban League, and the churches in our community. And we want, and this is about us taking responsibility in our community about values and behavior. And so the teachers can't teach if our students are not listening. And I'm stepping up as a leader in our community to say that we have this issue in our community about values and respect. And so that's what this comes from. It's about values, and we need to say this from a community standpoint in the African American community in particular, with the achievement gap 40%. Behind the white community, and I'm here to say it as a leader, and I carry the word of the Urban League, the NAACP, and our churches to say we want to take this on. It's about parenting. It's about value, us saying that we have some issues here, and now we, and that's why we're over here at the legislature to ask for your help in continuing to push this value and communication part. And next, I will introduce Todd Barnes, who's will give an overview of what we did so far.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flowers. Mr. Barnes, welcome.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. It's an honor and a privilege to testify before you this morning, and I know that the chairman said be succinct, and so I'm going to try to do that. I appreciate that. It's a big day in the community. It's a big day in the African-American community, and a big day in the state of Minnesota. They say when you have an addiction or a problem that the first step is to admit you have the problem. Parent abdication of responsibility, parent abdication in the African-American community in terms of concentrating on values and standards, well-defined values and standards, and communicating those values and standards to students and teachers and parents has been a problem. And so we're here today to offer a fix, not a whole fix, but a piece of the fix. And it's four different areas. First of all, we will have mental health practitioners in our schools that look like our young people. So we have teamed up with folks like Dr. Brabada Akinsanya, who's a leading psychologist, and she will lead a team of mental health practitioners to go into our schools to work with our young people on a one-on-one basis. The other is a strong outreach strategy for parents, getting them to learn how to advocate effectively in the school systems for their children. The third is a high-profile initiative, several high-profile initiatives throughout the upcoming years. The first campaign, which is Getting Back to Good. It's a very simple slogan, Getting Back to Good. What does that mean? It means telling folks in our community that good grades, good communication, good goals, good plans are important. And so we will help define what that means. The cornerstone of our project is rewarding positive behavior in our community. Let's start looking at what's working and shining a light on those individuals, those students, those parents who are doing the right thing. And then lastly, critical dispatch in our communities, so that when you have incidents like at South High School recently, we need folks to get in there and, number one, prevent those situations, folks who are familiar with the kids, folks from the community, and then if a critical situation, crisis situation happens, to be able to diffuse those situations. So values, standards, communication is what we're asking you to help us with, in particularly the African-American community of the city of Minneapolis. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Barnes. Welcome.
Thank you. Rebecca Gagnon, Minneapolis Public School Board. And
would
I will be very, very...
last name?
Gagnon, G-A-G-N-O-N. Okay. It's Gagnon. It's Acadian French. So, you know, Minneapolis Public Schools, we have found that the number one complaint of teachers is safety in their classroom. The number one complaint of students is disruption in the classroom. And we are looking for a way to have a conversation and share a common understanding of what how a classroom should run, how students should advocate, but also speak to the teachers, speak to the staff, and then how a teacher responds. I think that is not every teacher knows how to teach the diverse group of students that we have. With the different learning styles. So this is a way to have those conversations and to help parents have the conversation about how their child learns in a respectful manner. And encouraging, one thing, I always want to make sure that schools are very welcome before I encourage parents to go and visit. So we need to make sure our schools are very welcome for all parents to visit and all community members to visit to advocate for children. And then we need to help the community figure out how to get into the schools and do that. We've had schools, Whittier, Lindale, that have turned around because of community and family involvement. And that's a very important factor in school success where possible. And I'm not talking PTAs, I'm not talking fundraisers, I'm talking parent-teacher conferences, showing up and reading in the classroom and so forth. So that is where I see this initiative. And I see it as much, I like that it's Minneapolis, it's in the community, because what happens in the community comes into our buildings. And that's something that, you know, we don't have the funds or resources to prevent. So, but when it comes into the classroom, then it is our problem. So we would like to collaborate with the community in having a standard of values and how we work with each other to make students' achievement better.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Representative Mallory, do you have any further testifier?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if anybody remembers, how many on the committee know what he was talking about, the incident at South High School? There was a yeah. There was, I mean, this shows the kind of things that we need to get at. There was a hanging of an effigy.
That was at Washburn High School.
No.
That
wasn't the one.
At Washburn High School, some kids played a joke and hung a dark-skinned baby doll by its neck, like a noose, in the hallway. And then at South High, we had some, an amazing fight.
Yes.
It started with a food fight, but then it became an all-out fight in the cafeteria, and it was ended up being race. Mm-hmm. So those are some things that we need to be able to have the conversations, and I think the conversations aren't happening in the home either, so it needs to be in the home and at school that we have these conversations of how to get along.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative
if people would come to the schools, they would see why this is needed. It's very apparent if you go into the schools. I also hear from students of color that have moved from distant areas in, how much this issue is a huge issue affecting the learning and affecting the achievement gap. And I think one of the most glaring things to me was students from Morris came to one of my schools, and they were helping teach for a day, but during lunch they all went off in a corner, in the farthest corner. They were telling me that they had never seen anything like this, and they kind of got together. It is really something that is extremely important, and if we don't solve this type of issue by doing this, we're not going to solve the achievement gap. And that's going to cost all of us a lot of money in the future.
Thank you. Anyone else here in the audience like to testify for or against House File 1401? Any questions from members? Representative McDonald?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mullery, when you said regarding the teachers that came to visit and teach and they were in the far corner of the lunchroom, you said they've never seen anything like this. Seen what?
Representative Mullery.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, it wasn't teachers, it was students from Morris. Students from Morris. Let's say the school was not the quiet classroom that they're used to. And that's what we're trying to get at, is Mr. Flowers has worked on this for a long time, built it up. Now they're working closely with the schools on this, and we need to, if, as I've said before, the national studies are showing that if you don't have the right executive brain functions on students so that they have good judgment, socialization, things like this, understand their responsibility, you're not going to get achievement in the classroom either, normally, and on an IQ function of the brain.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd just like to thank Representative Mullery for bringing this bill forward, and for Al Flower being here today to represent the community. Because I think one of the importance of when we talk about kids achieving and success in the community and in home, it starts with community taking ownership of what that looks like and directing it from the inside out. And so I think what with the partnerships with the churches, the community, the Urban League, NAACP, taking that leadership role to help and support parents, youth and the school, that a program and initiative like this can surely work towards closing the achievement gap. So just want to thank you guys for the work that you're doing.
Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the testifiers. Hey, I just want to thank you also for stepping up and wanting to address this concern. Just a couple comments I'd make is, you know, if we look historically back on our educational system, when we used to teach our children moral absolutes based on the Ten Commandments, it seems like we didn't have these types of problems. The other thing I'd say is that if, you know, the Minnesota Constitution states that we, the people of the state of Minnesota, grateful to God for our civil and religious liberties. So teaching students that we have God-given rights, okay, and that we're a republic, changes our perception on how we view each other, regardless of what our ethnic background is. Now, what happened, our courts did us a favor and kicked God out of the public school, and that, or they thought they did a favor, and then atheistic psychologists came in with, instead of the Ten Commandments, they came in with the Ten Suggestions and said, if it feels good, do it. So if you work with psychologists, I'd certainly find one that believes in moral absolutes, okay? Because this idea of looking within yourself and getting in touch with your feelings is going to create better behavior is worthless, in my opinion. Thank you.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You had mentioned one of the goals was advocacy for parents within the public school system. Can you kind of just elaborate on what that looks like?
Mr. Barnes?
The school system most school systems, but especially in Minneapolis, is vast and wide in its bureaucracy and in its reach. Parents do not know how to navigate that successfully. But let me bring it down to more of a base level that was touched on by Board Member Gagnon. When you have three parents show up at student parent-teacher conferences in a school out of 250 young people, that is horrifying to me. Parents are not involved. They don't know what their kids are doing on a day-to-day basis, and they don't know what their kids are doing in school in general. The last thing I would say, and so we need strategies to wake up some parents and say, look, your kids are in the school. It's your responsibility to get with the program and start attending these conferences. Now, do we do it in that tone of voice? No, but we do it in creative strategies that motivate parents to get the picture. And so that's important, and that's the kind of advocacy we need by parents, and you know that's the kind of passion we need with parents. That's how I'd answer that.
Representative Woodard.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would maybe suggest you use that tone of voice because I'm convinced when you use it. So I appreciate that. Thank you,
Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the testifiers for giving an overview on the program. And I guess I'm just looking for a little bit more on the nuts and bolts on how this would work. So my question is, how would the money be used to incentivize the good behavior? Is it going to be like a matching program with businesses in the community? Is this, you know, kind of meeting or matching up with the funds that businesses would contribute as well, kind of like seed money? Or how
you nailed the strategy exactly on the head. We've got to have a coordinator and folks who go out to businesses and talk frankly about what's happening in our community and getting them to put up different things that they have in their businesses as incentives for young people and to reward positive behavior. And so we're not asking for money directly from the state to hand out to students for doing what they should be doing in the first place. We're asking money for a coordinator that could bring us a further reach and get us deeper into the community to encourage the positive behavior and values we're looking for.
If I can add, this is about values and talking from our community. We're the 40% behind the white community on the achievement gap, and this is about us coming and saying this problem, that's what's going on, and getting support from it, that instead of having a big business saying one thing and then blaming the teachers and the teachers blaming big business as they're arguing with each other. There's somebody in the middle of that, and that's these parents and these students, and that's what we are trying to get to. We're trying to get away from these two fights over here. And while these two are fighting, saying we should be in private schools, the other side is, you know, they're arguing with each other, but there's somebody in the middle that's dying right now in our community, and that's the African-American community. In the year 2040, they'll be a majority of the workforce in the state of Minnesota. So we want them to be able to know what they got to read when they are giving medication to me. I know I do.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I applaud looking for a way to improve the situation. And what I was hoping to hear is that you had looked at major metropolitan areas across the nation that have had programs and instituted activities to try and re-engage the community, and I, you know, maybe that there wasn't enough time to cover that, but frankly there are areas that have across the nation that have done things that have worked to re-engage. Three parents showing up, I think part of that is a symptom of where we're telling the parents that they don't need to be engaged, they don't need to sign the permission slips. We aren't going to the parents and having conversations as a community and the teachers and the schools. Too often we want to bypass going to the voters, we want to bypass this and that's because the districts know better. After a while, when you no longer ask, the community doesn't feel like they're part of the conversation. When you have school board meetings where you have most of the businesses in a consent agenda and you don't have that discussion, even though the people will agree with the vast majority you're going to do, they feel as if they're not engaged. So there are a lot of little things that add up, and over, I assume, years, maybe decades, we've eroded that partnership. And I think we really need to look at some of the systemic things that we built in that have created this feeling that the parents don't need to be involved because the school is taking care of it. I don't have a silver bullet, but I do know that there are a lot of other communities that have been facing this over decades, and if you could maybe look to things that they've done and bring back the neighborhood school feel. Good luck. I just hope that you keep your eyes open to other things that might have worked.
Representative Mueller, I don't know if that was the question necessarily, or anyone have a quick comment.
Well, I was just going to respond quickly. The community feel of the schools, you're very right, and we have looked around the nation, and this community grassroots effort is unique. There are bits and pieces going on of reaching out. I think St. Paul is doing a phenomenal job with their home visit program, and that's something that we can model off of. But the choice program when you have a block with kids going to seven different schools, you can't build that community support around a neighborhood school. So I would say we also need to have that conversation around the Choice Is Yours program so that we can revitalize our neighborhoods and support around our community schools.
Thank you. Representative Mallory, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chairman, but if anybody has the doubts of how effective this would be, come to the Minneapolis schools, and I think you'll quickly be supportive of this. This is really important for just the kids' future, but it also affects our state's future.
Thank you very much. Representative Davney renews his motion to lay over House File 1401 for possible inclusion. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we have House File 1019, Representative Metza. Representative Van Zelk, would you do the honors to move House File 1019?
Very happy to move the bill.
All right, Representative Van Zelk.
Probably the best bill.
Moves to lay over House File 1019 for possible inclusion. No editorializing, please, on the motions.
Was that a question?
Representative Metza, if you would please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. House File 1019 is a bill that would basically set up a pilot program in northeastern Minnesota. And we would do that with the Northeast Area Service Co-op, and it would be used to coordinate energy savings in 10 small school districts in our area. And I know that the Education Committee is continually looking for ways to get additional money to our school districts, and so I know we'll be looking for cost-saving opportunities like this, and I guess I'll leave it at that and open it up to questions if anyone has any.
Any questions on House File 1019? Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chairman, to the author of the bill, in your packet of information is the ISANTI, a public schools energy cost savings program, and I see that they have a total of $2,577,509 in 8-year savings. That's significant to a school district. Our school districts in my district and city of Delano did the same thing, and considerable savings to the taxpayers, keeps more money in the classroom. A question on this Cambridge ISANTI program, did they have state money? Was there a bill for this program, pilot program, that allowed them to save money, or did they use the energy companies that we have in Minnesota, who oftentimes will, for free, come in and give a synopsis and a report on how to best save money in your schools.
You know, so two.
If you would please introduce yourself.
Yes. Mr. Chair, my name is Amy Anderson. I'm the general manager of Class 5 Energy, who is the creator of the Schools for Energy Efficiency program. Cambridge ISANTI actually has been in our program for 8 years. It is not a utility-funded program. Utilities have not quite figured out yet how to deal with behavior programs, which is not just putting a new boiler or new windows in, but it's engaging students and staff and administrators and facilities teams in looking at ways for low and no-cost savings and actually acting on those things, not just making recommendations. But the program is designed to really lead a district through those activities and then get them to move and act on them. And yes, Delano is also in our program as well and has saved a significant amount of money. We have started this program about 10 years ago, actually. Cambridge ISANTI is one of our star districts, but there are several others. The program has been in Moundsview, South Washington, Rosemont, Apple Valley, Eagan, White Bear Lake, Prior Lake, Invergrove Heights, Orono, about 50 districts in about 5 states. The program results, as I mentioned, requires a dedicated energy coordinator in the district. And Delano has one, Cambridge has one, oftentimes that's identified. But someone's got to be the boots on the ground to champion this. Again, this is not putting in a new piece of equipment. This is engaging people and educating them about what they can do in their own little sphere of influence. 2 or 3 things on the course of a day can make a significant difference when hundreds of people are doing them. So what we have found, when that person does exist, the results can be significant, as you mentioned, in Cambridge and in the other districts. The challenge is that we believe that every school district should have the opportunity for this kind of a program, and our challenge has been in smaller districts to be able to identify a person to do that. Many people in smaller districts, so you've got the superintendent who's sometimes serving lunch, you've got the assistant principal who's sometimes directing traffic. People are wearing multiple hats right now because the resources are a little bit lower. So by partnering with Service Co-op, what we would do is be able to provide that dedicated boots-on-the-ground coordinator for a number of districts, allowing them to get into this program and recognize those same levels of savings. That person is critically important to it going. Again, this is about engaging people, and without someone to do that, it does not ever really get off the ground and recognize the kind of results that we've seen in the larger districts.
Representative Van Zelt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, members, this is a good idea, and it should be utilized and implemented statewide in communities that have old buildings. In the case of northeastern Minnesota, especially the buildings located along the iron ore formation, the mining companies built those buildings, and that was a good thing. The problem is they were built 100 years ago. And since 1985, we've lost 50% of our student population. So every available opportunity to squeeze out some savings to provide rigor in the classroom is a good thing, not only for us on the Iron Range, but for you too. So I hope you can support this idea.
Anyone in the audience here that would like to testify for or against House File 1019? Hearing none, Representative Metz, any closing comments?
I guess just thank you for your consideration in including this in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Anselk renews his motion without the editorializing to lay over House File 1019 for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And under 10 minutes, look at that.
Yeah, you were you used your time very conservatively.
Where's the candy?
Energy efficient. So I'm going to have Representative Morgan take the meeting here for a few moments. Mm.
Next up on our list is House File 1645. Representative Bernardi, would you like to move your bill? Representative Bernardi?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move House File 1645 for possible inclusion in Omnibus Finance Bill.
The bill has been moved. Representative Bernardi, I would like to remind you and your testifiers that we're trying to move things along here today, so we have time for questions and testimony, but please proceed.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm bringing before you the bill for college and school. It's part of the concurrent enrollment initiative. Currently, we have this going on in the state of Minnesota. It passed in 2008. And what it does is it allows students to take classes in the school in collaboration. And we'll let my superintendent from Mounds Youth Schools discuss more about that in detail. We're focusing on the finance part of it today, and the finance bill allows fully funding this program, which is $8 million. Currently, there's $2 million that's prorated out to school districts that have students participating in this program. So we'd like to fully fund this. This is an initiative that helps prepare for the workforce. I especially love it because it helps students in the middle of their class be able to have opportunities to advance and to really hit the ground running when they hit college. They've already had success, and they know what to expect in school and personal responsibility as well as rigor in their academics. So I'm a huge proponent of that. I appreciate the support we've had in this from our members in the legislature. And I have two testifiers from the University of Minnesota who will talk briefly, and also Dr. Hooverman from the, or Mr. Hooverman? Dr. Hooverman, correct? Yeah. From a superintendent from Mounds Youth Schools. And I'd like to start with that. Thank you.
Superintendent, please state your name for the record.
Dan Hooverman, superintendent, Mounds Youth Schools. And thank you for having me here today. The comments that I would like to make are that what we've been working on in our system, and I think a number of systems across the state, are to put together a range of options for students. And that range of options may include advanced placement courses, may include concurrent enrollment through some of the new programs related to early college. But certainly CIS, or college in the schools, is a major component of that for us in our system. We do face a bit of a restriction in terms of how aggressively we can pursue that because full funding is not there. It isn't a matter in our system of either doing it or not doing it. It's looking at, again, the range of courses that we're willing to provide for our students. Because we're looking at this in terms of everywhere from the top 25%, the kids in the middle, to kids who have challenges, we're always looking for new innovative ways to do that. This program has been a part of that. Right now, in both of our high schools, we offer three courses. We have considered others, but again, have been restricted because of the shortfall in the funding to help support that. So we really would encourage you to take a look at full funding of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then, Mr. Chair, we have
Bernardi.
Julie Williams and Jan Erickson from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities.
Ms. Williams?
Thank you. I would just want to emphasize.
Introduce yourself for the tape, please, Ms. Williams.
Sorry, Julie Williams from the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I just wanted to emphasize for the members of the committee that $50 million were saved in college tuition last year for because of students participating in concurrent enrollment courses.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Ms. Erickson.
Hello, Jan Erickson, University of Minnesota, Twin Cities College in the Schools program. Thank you so much for hearing this today. I'd just like to make two points, and I think most people are really familiar. I see familiar faces around the table. However, college in the schools and concurrent enrollment programs address not only opportunities for students, but opportunities for teachers. So because concurrent enrollment has a requirement of being NASEP accredited, the National Alliance of Concurrent Enrollment Partnerships provides a structure for quality programs for concurrent enrollment. And part of that is an option to provide and requirement to provide professional development options for teachers. So in our program, not only are the teachers well-versed in the college curriculum, they have ongoing, specific, current, discipline-specific professional development, on average 22 hours per year. So I've heard many principals say, this is one reason I want to choose this, in addition to the opportunity for the students. So, two for one. And then I just also want to mention that concurrent enrollment serves not only the top students, which it has for many, many years, but also serves the middle student who may or may not see themselves as college bound, but has this opportunity in an environment that's a tiny bit safer than stepping on campus, but in terms of taking a risk, academic risk. And there are a number of programs that have instituted specific options, but also specific courses that really serve the need and address that particular student and provides them a stepping stone. Thanks.
Thank you. Representative Bernardi, do you have any other testimony right now?
Nope, that's testimony. I just have comments to wrap up with after questions.
All right, we'll have a question for members. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Bernardi, for bringing this bill forward. And it's been a huge help to my district, District 196, down in the Rosemount, Apple Valley, and Eagan area. And just wanted to share a couple comments of how it's benefited our community. I got an email from our principal of Rosemount High School, and he said that in the 2011 to 2012 school year, 469 students were able to take these courses, and the credits were valued at $879,133, but the cost to the state was only $19,229. So it's clearly a good investment to be focusing on these dual credit programs, and I also benefited from this when I was in high school doing a post-secondary enrollment option. So I'm a big fan, and I think it's a good program. I do have a couple questions, though, on the funding, just because I'm concerned about just a couple of the mechanics, and so I want to get a better understanding of that. My question was for the teachers that are teaching the college courses, is it true that those teachers are already hired by the school district, so they're being paid by school district dollars, and they would be paid regardless of whether this program was in place, and, mm-hmm. and thus maybe covering some of those costs?
Okay, thank you for bringing that up.
Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wills. How this program works, it's a very affordable program. It costs $149 per student because of the collaboration between the high, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, the higher education institution and the school district. And so the money, the pot of money to fully fund it would take $8 million for the students that are participating. Currently, we have $2 million in the pot, so about $39 or so goes to help cover this program. And we want to fully fund it because this is something that is a good investment for schools and for our state of Minnesota because it's such a cost saver in the long run. And the really neat thing about this is the research shows that if students have 20 earned credits by the time they're done with their freshman year, they're going to be successful in college. This helps them get a running start on that and creates momentum for them to be successful and to graduate.
Dr. Hoffman, these teachers who are teaching the classes in your district are already employed by the district. Isn't that correct?
Correct, yes.
Thank you, Dr. Hoffman. Representative Wills?
So just to follow up, thank you. Mr. Chair, so if I'm understanding this correctly, the $150 per student is a cost that's on top of what is already being paid to the teachers, so it actually costs more than $150 per student when you factor in the payment going to the teachers already? I don't know if I'm explaining it very well.
Representative Bernardi, or is there somebody else who wants to answer that question?
How it works is they're going to get, the teachers are getting paid regardless in the schools. There's an additional fee to make this program work in the schools, and that costs $149 that the higher institution is paid for each student that takes, each credit or each student?
Each student
takes in the class.
Ms. Erickson.
Thank you. Chairman and members. In College and the Schools, I'll talk specifically about our program. It's $145 per course per student. So our enrollment fees cover everything from creating the transcript and registering students and doing those logistical pieces to providing the professional development for teachers to work with departments specifically. So all of those costs are part of that particular fee.
And Ms. Erickson, I think maybe what needs to be cleared up here is who's getting that $145?
The post-secondary institution that holds the responsibility for making sure this is the college course offered on another location.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Bernardi.
And then, Mr. Chair, so this bill helps reimburse the schools for paying the colleges that fee. And a lot of schools are visionary, and they just really see the benefit to students, and so they're doing it now. This would help them raise it up, because right now it's not fully funded, so whatever money is funded, it gets distributed evenly across the students that participate. So school districts are actually technically, well, I'm not going to say losing money, because it's a great investment in students, but they're only getting funded about $39 per course.
Representative Wills?
And just to follow up, thank you, I appreciate mm-hmm. this. So then that cushion that's not being covered right now, who's paying that now? Is that the school district or the students or?
Yes, we cover
Dr. Overman.
So we cover that out of our general fund.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a really quick question. What are the qualifications for a student to be enrolled in the concurrent program?
Go ahead. Ms. Williams?
The qualifications vary depending on the course, and the for all of the Minsku institutions, it's the top 50% of their class. For the University of Minnesota, it depends on the department requirements. So, for example, some of our courses are the top 20%, some are the top 30% of their class, and some of them are the top 50%. And then we have a few courses that are specifically designated for students in the academic middle. And those would be between the top 50% and the top 20%.
Moran.
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Bernardi, you want to add to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, and I'd also like to comment. The University of Minnesota has an entry point project where students can actually earn college credit. And this is an excellent program to get students introduced that 32% of these students come from homes where neither parent attended college. 47% of these students are qualified for free and reduced lunch at some time in the past. And 22% of these students, English was not their primary language spoken in the home.
Representative Moran, a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if you had a student who was performing at a C level, it's a possibility that they could enroll in one of these concurrent programs.
Ms. Erickson?
Thank you. we want the students to be prepared to succeed. If this is their first college course, we want them to be ready to take that on. And what we find is the courses that are offered are in the disciplines that are offering them. Teachers work backwards. They prepare the students to be able to come to that place and be able and articulate that curriculum so they are able to succeed in it. And yes, so students who are at the 50%, so it sort of depends on their student population, 50% would be able to take that course.
We need to start to wrap this up, I think, if we could, members. President Moran. Representative Anzels, do you have a quick question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another good idea. It's necessary. But I have struggled and with going into high schools and visiting with high school seniors, 12th graders, granted, in rural greater Minnesota, in declining population districts, low property wealth, I mean, that's the profile. But I come away wondering why we're keeping 12th graders in those buildings. I struggle with, again, the curriculum, duplication. I struggle with the dollars being expended for that student in the 12th year of their public education without what I would describe, and I'm fairly literate about learning and about how kids, you know, do things. I just come away wondering why we're keeping them there. And if it's to play hockey or football, that really troubles me. So, just a thought.
But not if it's to wrestle, right, Representative Marquardt? Is there public testimony on this bill? Representative Dabney, I'm sorry.
No, that's quite all right, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Right behind Representative Moran there.
I'll do a little of this. I just want to respond to Representative Anzels. It's because some of the strength of college in the schools under the larger umbrella of post-secondary enrollment options is that options piece. For some of those kids, they want to get out of Dodge. And they want to get to their local community college. They want to get to their university that's nearby and take classes there. Some kids, they want to be there in high school for that 12th grade experience or their 11th grade experience. I carried the bill in 2008 that got the initial funding. And it was the most striking piece of legislation that I've carried in my now 13 years. Because I had lobbyists who weren't education lobbyists, folks I didn't even recognize bluntly, coming up to me and saying, I saw in bill introductions, you're doing something with college and the schools, what are you doing? And they were threatened because they didn't understand what I was doing. And they wanted to make sure first that I didn't blow up a program that was working for their kids. And I remember one, a constituent who contacted me. His daughter was top flight academically, fully capable by her senior year of doing college level work. She could have left high school and gone to the university full time and done just fine. But she was also captain of the volleyball team. And that had been her passion. She'd played for 4 years. That was what enriched her life, her social life and her emotional life. What she wanted was a program that enriched her academic life. And college and the schools allowed her to put that package together. She's now a senior in political science at the University of Minnesota, will graduate this spring. So this program allows kids to have that experience and stay in school or, through PSEO, leave the high school or some combination of the two. I think that's why we want to fund this program, because of the options it provides kids to pick where's their comfort level, where's their passion, what's the experience they want, while also giving them the opportunity and the access for college so that kids can get in and get that initial college experience, know that they can do it, and get some access to some kids who otherwise are going to look at college and say, oh, I can't do that, that's not for me. In fact, it can be if we give them the opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm going to call Representative Brainard. I'd like to remind members that we can come back at 4 o'clock if we do not finish the three bills we have after this. So, Representative Brainard. Well,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be really quick. I just wanted to comment that the assessment reform piece that we heard earlier as a part of the omnibus policy bill really is intimately connected with concurrent enrollment as an option, but among others, the whole range of PSEO, concurrent enrollment, AP, IB, opportunities for students to earn college credit in high school and be directed on a career and or college path, you know, is they're intimately connected. And the reason we didn't take on funding concurrent enrollment in that bill was it's a part of what I think the task force will begin to address, is how we scaffold all these pieces that are needed to align secondary and post-secondary. But I'm a strong supporter of the program, and I certainly hope we figure out how to fully fund it in the long run.
Representative Bernardi, you want to wrap up your bill?
Yes, I will, and I'll try to be brief, but Representative Dabney, I want to thank you for your leadership on that, and Representative Reinhart for your continued leadership as well, and both of yours. I just want to reiterate that this is a accredited programs are in Brainerd, at Central Lakes College, Northland Community College, Technical College in Thief River Falls, Mesabi Range Community and Technical College in Virginia, University of Minnesota Crookston, Southwest State University in Marshall, and the list goes on. This is all over the state, and I'm very proud to represent the Mountain View School Districts who really are really invested in making sure, getting a roadmap and making sure that every student is successful in whatever they choose for their post-secondary education. And this bill covers a trade schools as well as other academic classes. And I really appreciate your support and hope we can include this in the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bernardi, and thank you to your testifiers. House File 1645 will be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Dabney, your bill is next, and I will turn the chair back over to the... No, Mr. Chair. Come on. All right. We'll keep moving along. Representative Dabney.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 924 be before the committee for possible inclusion in the... what do we call that thing? Omnibus bill.
That's it, Representative Dabney. Go ahead and proceed on your bill.
Thank you very much. And after the speech on the last bill, I'll try to be briefer on my own. How's that sound? House File 924 has a number of different provisions in it. It increases state aid for the mandated developmental screening that's already done, recognizing that this is an existing program. It's mandated, but the state funding does not cover the costs, requiring school districts to use general fund dollars to cross-subsidize the important developmental screening that allows issues in young children to be identified early when interventions can be both more effective and more cost-effective. It allows districts to transport students to an articulated post-secondary program. I believe this committee has seen that provision previously. Allows districts that currently transport a homeless child from wherever they're living to their home school to also transport a sibling that has never been in the schools to that same school. Think of a second grader who's homeless. The school district transports the child from the homeless shelter to their home school. They've got a younger sibling who's going to start kindergarten in the fall. This provision allows the kindergartner to go to the same school with their big brother and sister from the shelter. That's a lot simpler for mom or dad, and it's a lot warmer and more welcoming for that incoming kindergartner. It includes a narrow expansion of the graduation incentives program to assist new immigrant students, new Americans to get to graduation, and extends the capital bonding authority. With that, Mr. Chair, I have several testifiers with me today. I'm just not sure who wants to go first.
Well, whoever would go ahead and introduce yourself and give us your testimony, please.
Good morning. My name is Maureen Seiwert, and I'm the Executive Director of Early Childhood Education for the Minneapolis Public Schools. And I thank you for the opportunity again to address you on the important work that is going on across the state in early childhood. Early childhood screening is an integrated part of the work that we do in ECFE and school readiness and our pre-K program, which we fund by Title I. Early childhood screening is actually the essential sort of gateway to ensure that we have the right children in our early learning programs to assist in reaching the Minneapolis school goal of all children will be ready for kindergarten. Our vision is every child is college and career ready, and so we believe what we're doing in early childhood screening is starting on children on that path to be ready for college and career. Currently, last year we screened almost 4,000 children in the Minneapolis schools. Some of the highlights of our data, which are in your slides, so I'm not going to go through them one by one in the interest of time, but we increased the screening of African American, Asian, Hispanic, and Native American children, and we maintained the percentage of three-year-olds. There is a very big push in our district and in the city of Minneapolis and St. Paul and throughout the state to screen more three-year-olds, so then to provide the opportunity of the 2 years before kindergarten to ensure that those children are given adequate early childhood intervention services if needed, or medical or vision or hearing or whatever it is that is identified through screening, if anything, as something that might make them at being at risk for not being ready for school. Again, a portion, about 1,100 of our 4,000 children that we screen are three-year-olds. Every year that has continued to grow, but it is a time-intensive undertaking. Three-year-olds, as you all know, that are familiar with young children are different than five-year-olds and require more time and efforts to get an adequate screen on them. Our total budget that we are screening in Minneapolis is $672,000 a year. $210,000 of that is what the state reimburses us for screening. So about a third of our costs are covered by the state reimbursement for screening. The rest we make up through Fund One, through Title One, through grants from the United Way and the City of Minneapolis, through school readiness outreach funds, and also through early childhood family education. We have parent education staff that work with families at the time of screening to really find the best fit for what their needs are for their young children. The standard components of screening, outreach, referral, follow-up, we use bilingual associate educators. We provide parent education. We screen in the shelters those homeless and highly mobile pre-K kids that Representative Dabney was talking about. All have access to early childhood screening in the shelter. Our additional costs, as I said, three-year-olds are more expensive than five-year-olds. We provide outreach in multiple languages and in multiple formats. We provide interpretation at the time of screening. Screening can be done in Minneapolis in four different languages. We screen in community partnership. We take very seriously that not all families are comfortable coming to the school district, so we work with our community child cares, with Head Start, with local preschools to ensure that early childhood screening is done. We provide transportation if necessary, and we provide coordination services with early childhood special education, Head Start, and our medical providers. We are in a very close partnership with Head Start. They are one of the other entities that is able to provide early childhood screening. So we use the same screening tool, and they provide all of their screening records to us prior to the start of the school year.
So, Ms. Seibert, yes. I want to encourage you to move along. If we have other testifiers here with your group.
Okay.
Thank you.
To close, again, a third of our costs are covered by the current reimbursement. So we request that you think about, as we expand early childhood services in the state of Minnesota, we also want to make sure that children are adequately screened and we have the right children in place to go in our early childhood programs. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Rose Santos. I'm the principal of LEAP High School. LEAP is a school that's dedicated, it's an alternative program, alternative high school that's dedicated for students who are learning English as a second English language learners. We service students from the age of 14 to 21 years of age. I'm coming to you to ask you to please provide us resources so that we can service students to the age of 23. Around this time of the year, I have many students in my office saying, please, Ms. Santos, I'm so close to graduating. I just have 1 year left. Please let me stay. And I said, please make an exception for me. And I tell them I cannot. I have different agencies, Karen agencies, Hmong agencies, Clues, calling to see if I can make exceptions for these students to stay to finish. Those students are, I have the highest attendance rate in the district of St. Paul. These students come to school. They are good they're good citizens, good students, and 85% of my students who graduate from LEAP High School go on to post-secondary education. They come from countries that they have not had the opportunity to go to school before. 60% of my population of students have had 1 to 2 years of education. So they need a little bit more time in order to learn the language and also the content area that they're studying in. They have the same requirements as any other high school student in Minnesota. They have to take all their tests in order for them to pass to get that diploma. So I implore you, it's only a handful of students. 100 students is all it affects. It's only a handful of students. 100 students is all it affects. And I think it would be a very wise investment. A lot of our alumni students who were allowed to stay beyond 21 years old are in college at Hamline, studying to be a lawyer, electrical engineer, nursing. So they are becoming very
contributing to our society. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Santos. Mr. Grothwell.
Mr. Chair and members, Jim Grothwell with Minneapolis Public Schools. I just want to reiterate on sections 4 and 5, it's very narrowly drawn for students, immigrants who arrive late in their educational career and just simply don't have time in the 3 to 4 years remaining in the traditional high school to get the job done. So this is a very important thing. We have a similar school in Minneapolis, Wellstone High School. I was just going to address the Minneapolis and St. Paul local bonding authorization. Minneapolis and St. Paul have had local authorization to bond for general obligation bonds. It's actually without going to voters, and this is basically what's been made it possible for Minneapolis and St. Paul to keep our facilities in good condition. Across the country, you have a story of like crumbling urban infrastructure, and actually across the state, that's an issue as well. This local authority has made the difference for us to be able to prevent that from happening in Minneapolis and St. Paul. It's we've had it for 23 years. It's been used responsibly and well. We report that to the Department of Education, and we'd encourage you to come visit the schools. Be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members? Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to the testifiers for explaining the bill. And I did have a question on something we didn't touch on yet that's a little bit later on, referring to the change of providing transportation to a sibling of a homeless student on pages 5 and 8. Just a technical question. When it's referring to the sibling that attends the same school, this is line 5.10. I'm just curious if the student that's already attending school is further up in grades that they would be maybe at the middle school and the sibling would need to enter elementary school, would this be null and void or would it still work or what would happen?
Ms. Gilbert?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Wills, this was discussed in the policy committee. It doesn't have a fiscal impact, but there has to be a school of record under the federal highly mobile and homeless transportation. And what this does is just simply allow, if the siblings all move to a new school, it may be a kindergartner, it may be that they may have gotten accepted to a magnet school or they may have gone to an immersion school in Etonka, that the family can just simply be transported together.
I'm sorry, Ms. Gilbert, since you're new to this testimony, could you introduce yourself?
I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools.
Thank you. Representative Wills.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm just not clear. It just might be helpful if it said same school district or something, just to ensure that there wouldn't be any complications if there were two different schools that the siblings would need to go to.
Ms. Gilbert?
That's why I'm confused. And I remember the discussion in policy. I was just
Representative Wills.
Curious on that.
Okay. Ms. Gilbert, did you have a response or no? Okay.
I would be happy to visit with you about this when it's over.
Wonderful. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question on the early childhood screening. I'm a little confused by the purpose for doubling the amount. Are you going to, you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other sources of funding in the Minneapolis Public Schools are using today. Is that just to supplant that funding? Or
no, it
what?
Is not.
Ms. Seiwert.
That's all right.
Yeah. We go through the chair so people listening to the tape know who's talking. Thank you.
It is not to supplant. There is continual pressure for us to increase the amount of early childhood screening. That 4,000 is a fraction, really, of the eligible children in the city of Minneapolis, as an example. And that we really are maxed out in terms of other sources to be able to really increase our funding in order to increase more students screened. So the goal isn't to supplant, but to actually expand. Because in 0 to 5, I know in the city of Minneapolis, there's about 28,000 children. So if you 3 to 5 year olds, there would be at least 15,000 children. And we want to ensure that we're getting all of those children screened.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I have the fortune of being married to a early childhood screener, or at least a former early childhood screener. And so I understand that you know, can be a problem, but I also understand there's a lot of different screening going on out there as well, from Head Start, and you mentioned some of those things. But this is just something that we're going to, are all schools asking for this? Is this massive need to double the early childhood screening? Because I can tell you, my experience, it really isn't. So I mean, maybe the Minneapolis public schools are, you know, make this is an issue for them and something that you're looking for. But I just, you know, is there anybody else here to testify beyond Minneapolis that thinks, you know, we need to double this, that this money would be okay? Great.
Ask and ye shall receive.
Yeah. And sometimes you shouldn't ask. Might not like the answer.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Al Ickler. I'm the executive director of community education for Robbinsdale Area Schools. My comment would be, or response to that is that many districts, and I know we are a district that also has a short fund in, or shortfall in that account. We represent seven cities, all our parts of seven cities in the west metro part of the district, ranging from Robbinsdale to Plymouth, Golden Valley to Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park. And every year we have a transfer of other dollars. We don't have the wide range of community partners that Minneapolis has to fill some of those gaps. And so, one, we find other dollars that would be used for early childhood or other fund, other programs in the school district that would be beneficial and transfer those dollars. And two, and I think I would very strongly advocate, like Maureen did, that we would do much more aggressive outreach and reach far more kids early in the process, those 3.5-year-olds, as opposed to 4.5 and 5-year-olds. And that's the intent, and that's the purpose, and that's the value of the screening piece. So I think there are a number of districts. I can't speak to how many, but when I talk to colleagues across the state, it is a very common issue that I hear.
Thank you, Mr. Ickler.
Thank
Representative
you,
Woodard.
Mr. Chair, just a quick follow-up. So what is the gap, then, between what you're spending today on your early childhood screening program versus what you actually need?
Over the past, it differs every year for various reasons, but over the past 5 years, it's ranged anywhere from about maybe $10,000 to $12,000 to $50,000. We are obviously a much smaller district than Minneapolis, but that's a significant sum of dollars for us as we try to fill that gap from some other source each and every year.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what are you spending today, then? So that you've got that, and then what's the gap?
We spend about $85,000 is our budget, and so when we had that $50,000 gap, that was significant. $15,000 on 85 is obviously a pretty significant percentage also. I didn't come prepared to testify when that rate was last raised, but it's been a good chunk of years since that those dollar amounts were put into place.
Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
Representative Anzell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, I really applaud the idea of additional outreach and to expand the availability of screening and so on and so forth. But just I want you to keep in mind that in much of greater Minnesota over the past 3 winters, fish houses have become shelters. Wow. For parents and little ones. And troubling as that may sound, and it is, but that gives new meaning to the outreach that needs to be done. And I just wanted to get that out there, in particular for the committee.
Thank you, Representative Enzel. Is there anybody from the public who would like to come down and testify for or against this bill? All right, Representative Dabney, would you like to wrap up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Dabney, House File 924 will be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Isaacson. You are next, House File 1491. Representative Seltzer, would you like to move House File 1491?
I move House File 1491.
Representative Seltzer moves House File 1491 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Representative Isaacson, I believe you have an author's amendment.
Yep.
Why don't we go ahead and move that? Representative Seltzer, would you care to move the DE1 amendment? Representative Seltzer moves the DE1 amendment. This will get the bill in the shape that you would like. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All in favor of the DE1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The The motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Isaacson, please speak to the bill as amended.
I think I'm going to, for the sake of brevity, I'm going to turn over to my testifier right away.
Wonderful, Representative Isaacson. Please introduce yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Connie Hayes, Superintendent of Northeast Metro 916 Intermediate School District. This bill gives authority to 916 Intermediate District to sell bonds for large health and safety projects and related maintenance, deferred maintenance projects. We are simply stuck in terms of improving our Capitol View building because of state statute. Current statute requires that health and safety projects over $500,000 or greater use alternative facilities funding. However, the Intermediate School District does not qualify for alternative facilities funding. Compounding the challenge is that we are not allowed to break a large project into smaller parts to be under this $500,000 maximum. Capitol View Center is located in a great location for our member districts to transport their students to us to serve. That, along with a price tag of more than $30 million to replace the building, we have decided to do deferred maintenance on the building to keep it viable for our use. Capitol View was built in the 1950s and still has its original systems, and so they are very outdated. In fact, parts for the boilers are no longer available, and we're now using parts from one boiler to fix the others. The fire marshal will not allow any improvements to that building until we install a sprinkling system. Sprinkling Capitol View, along with the abatements needed, is about $1 million in and of itself for just that component of the project. We can't even do small projects on the building. In fact, we tried to do this a couple years ago to add a secure entrance, only 100 square feet addition onto the building, and the fire marshal would not sign off on it unless we would sprinkle the building at the same time. So we don't qualify for alternative facilities bonding. We have a project much greater than $500,000. We're stuck and we can't move forward, and we are seeking your assistance. If approved by the legislature, this limited authority to bond would give the 916 Intermediate School Board, as duly elected board members in their respective districts, to approve authorization to sell bonds to a maximum of $7 million. We have estimated this principal amount would result in approximately $600,000 to $700,000 annual levy spread across the 10 members in our 10-member school districts. Per taxpayer, the annual increase would range from about $1.15 to $2.50. This authority would give the Intermediate School District the capacity to move ahead with the improvements needed at Capitol View Center, improve the health and safety for our member district students and our staff, and it would meet our member district's request to minimize annual spikes in their local levies by spreading the cost over a period of years. Thank you very much for your consideration of this request.
Thank you, Superintendent Hayes. Representative Isaacson.
I just wanted to point out that the alternative would be far more expensive in trying to purchase and build a new building for it. When we have an existing structure, we just need to fix, and it's just part of being stuck in the law, like they said. And so I would really just, that's all.
Thank you, Representative Isaacson. Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just have a question for either of you. Is this building in violation of state code right now?
Superintendent Hayes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, member. We are not currently in violation of any state code. However, as the building is quickly aging past its use, we simply are going to have to fix it up if we're going to stay in the building. And in order to fix it up, we have to have authority to move ahead because we just simply don't have resources. We're not like a K-12 district where we have authority in other sources of revenue. We have to look to our member district's lease levy authority by being a part of the Intermediate School District. So over time, we will likely become in violation of state code. If we do any project on the building, we're going to have to meet codes that we're, currently don't have to meet because we haven't made improvements, such as the sprinkling or the air quality in the building and a variety of those kinds of things as well.
Mr.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, thank you. And is there any precedence for this type of request?
Superintendent Hayes.
Yes, Mr. Chair, member. There is precedent for this a little history for those of you that might not be familiar. Many years ago, Intermediate 916 actually ran Century College, and when Minsky was formed, we were pulled out of that. We no longer had direct access to taxpayers, and we were not provided bonding authority at that time. So anytime we need bonding authority, we have to come to the legislature for special assistance. And that was done in 2001, I believe, for 916 of $2 million, and 917 had a bond for about $5 million recently as well.
Thank you, Dr. Hayes. Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Selson?
No. Thank you.
Representative Quam.
Thank you. Is there any possibility of a surprise with asbestos or other issues? I know we had an older building, and we decided that we could not expand in that because of bringing it up to the newest code plus other issues. So can you make sure that there's no surprises?
Superintendent Hayes, I'm not sure you can promise no surprises, can you?
Mr. Chair, member, we've had the building analyzed extensively, and part of the reason the bonding request of up to $7 million is there is because we know we have a lot of asbestos in the tunnels, and so when we upgrade the heating and ventilation system, we've got a lot of abatement that we're going to have to do in order to complete the project. So hopefully beyond that, we don't have other surprises.
Okay, Representative Quam. Is there anybody from the public who would like to give testimony for or against the bill? Come on down. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and share your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Kathy Buchholz. I'm a member of the school board for Stillwater, and we are a member district of 916. And I did sit on their board, and I just want to support this request. The intermediate school districts are not covered by a lot of legislation, and so I do support that they would have the authority to bond to do the necessary improvements that they need to do for the Capitol Hill Capitol View building. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other public testimony? Representative Isaacson, would you like to wrap up your bill?
Thank you. I just think it makes sense to give them the ability to provide the kind of buildings they need to be safe and positive for our kids, and I hope you'll get this through. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Representative Isaacson. House File 1491 will be laid over as amended for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. As the chair returns to his chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Morgan. Representative Newton. And while Representative Newton's coming forward, I would like to kind of announce the schedule for the next few days, and there is a change from what has been announced before, at least a tentative change. At 2:30 today, the omnibus finance bill will be on electronic format, so you can go to the Education Finance Committee and find that. So that will be at 2:30. That will be available. Tomorrow, the intent is to go through the bill. Then on Thursday morning, to have testifying. We might get to some testifying actually tomorrow, so be ready to go. And then Thursday, more testifying. And then the changes coming back Thursday night after session to do amendments. Also, we had planned to do that on Friday morning. Still keep Friday morning open, but we're looking at now doing the amendments Thursday night and finishing the bill Thursday night after session. So amendments then, we would waive the 24-hour rule on amendments. And we look at, and I talked to Representative Woodard earlier, and he's very gracious to accommodate this change, that we'd be looking at probably a noon deadline Thursday for amendments. Noon deadline Thursday for amendments for the meeting. So thank you very much. So that's kind of the schedule of events, but still keep Friday morning open. Don't book that quite yet. So thank you. Representative Newton, would you please move your bill? And we're going to get through this and quickly, and we will have no meeting tonight.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 1383 for layover for possible inclusion in the K-12 Omnibus Finance Bill. This is a simple bill. It's requested by the governor and the commissioner of education to create a 10-member task force to deal with special ed, to and it's primarily to look at how many teachers and paraprofessionals we need with special ed students. Secondarily, it's going to be looking at the OLA report and try to come up and streamline reporting systems and possibly do away with some of the state mandates that go beyond the federal mandates. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to recommend that we lay this bill over.
Very good. First of all, I'll ask if there's anyone that would like to testify from the audience for or against House File 1383. Seeing none, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Representative Newton, you know, we just got the legislative auditor's report. How would this be different than what the legislative auditor and their pretty extensive report brought to us?
Representative Mr.
Chair and Representative Woodard, the primary function of this task force is to look at teaching ratios to make sure that we've got the right number of teachers with a certain number of students and paraprofessionals. But in addition to this, after the governor and the commissioner met on this, the OLA report came out, and so they're going to be expanding this task force to also look at those issues that were brought up by the Office of the Legislative Auditor.
Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, thanks for the testimony, Representative Newton. But, you know, when we had that joint meeting with the Senate that time, I just brought up we've got additional requirements over and above the federal special education. And I brought up, is there an assessment of the cost and effectiveness? And the response was, no, we never done that. So, I mean, to the you mentioned the additional that they were going to look at some of these additional state requirements. And to the degree that they could look at, you know, the effectiveness, you know, we just pile on all these additional regulations which drive up costs. To the degree that they could look at that and come up with cost and effectiveness recommendations, I don't know whether that would be completely within the scope of their committee, but that to me is very important. If we're driving up costs and we have no idea how effective or what the cost is, and we just, you know, and I know they're all well intentioned, but to me you know, we want to meet the needs of the students, but we want to be effective and efficient in doing it. So just a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Mr. McHenry is here, and I will ask him to bring that your comments back to the commissioner, and that those items that you mentioned could possibly be included in this. With that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion.
Very good. Representative Newton renews his motion to... What number are we looking at? 1383, the layover House File 1383 for possible inclusion. Very good. Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Well, Mr. Chair, I see we have a new member, actually a returning member, and I wanted to good to see you again, and welcome back.
Vice Chair Slocum is back. Yes, welcome. Very good.
You're looking good.
Anything else for the good of the order? Very good. Members, we're adjourned.